So then the question is that where is God? So we say God is everywhere. So God is everywhere. Okay, how do I find him? Or why don't I see him? And how can I know God? This is one of the most beautiful shlokas, and you must have heard Swamiji's chant every time. Whenever you bring them bhiksha, lunch or dinner, they chant this mantra. So today now you'll know the meaning. So when Swamiji chants, you can say, Swamiji, I know the meaning of what you have said. So we'll try to cover that in verse number 24. Brahmarpanam brahma havihi. Brahmagnau brahmana hutam. Brahmeiva tena gantavyam. Brahma karma samadhina. So, Brahman. Now, what is Brahman? We'll talk about, but Brahman is the total consciousness which supports this entire universe. And the whole universe emerged from Brahman, that consciousness. So here he's talking about a yajna. As we know, when we do a yajna, now this is the traditional yajna where there is a fire pit and the fire is lit by wood. And then there is a yajman who is organized the yajna. He invites the priest and requests him to do the yajna. So there is a priest, there is a yajman for whom the yajna is being done. There is a yajna pit, there is wood in there is a fire, there is ghee is being poured, clarified butter, and mantras are being chanted. So Bhagwan Shri Krishna says everything is yajna, brahma arpanam. So Brahman is the oblation, is the offering. Offering means not only we offer ghee or clarified butter in the fire, but we offer grain, we put some wood, and then we put some, you know, other things, food, material, nuts and all that. So all that arpanam is Brahman. Or another commentator reads arpanam as the ladle. You know, we have a ladle like a spoon or a little karchi like with which we pour the butter, the ghee. So he says the ladle is Brahman. And Brahma Havihi, and Brahman is the ghee, is the butter, and all the oblations that are offered are Brahman. So the agent, the instrument I'm using is Brahman, the spoon, and what I'm offering in the fire, the butter and the offerings, oblations are all Brahman. Brahmagnav, and the fire is Brahman too. The fire in which it is being offered is Brahman. And who is offering? The yajman, you know, the one for whom the yajna is going on. And he is offering, so he is also Brahman. So the fire is Brahman, the wood is Brahman, the ghee is Brahman, the person offering is Brahman, the one who is chanting the mantras is Brahman, the mantras are also Brahman because they come from the Upanishads. And then what is the goal of this yajna? Brahma eva tena gantavyam. Tena, by this individual, Brahman is attained. He is going towards Brahman. Why? Brahma karma samadhina. All his actions are devoted to Brahman. So when my actions are devoted to Lord, then my goal becomes God, and then I reach him. Now, why do they chant during eating? You know, I understand they chanted during yajna, but why do they chant during eating? Actually, I myself, for a long time, I was not clear to me, why is this being chanted before food? You know, yes, before yajna, you do it, I understand. Brahma arpanam, brahma havi, brahma agnav. But why is this? So, we'll talk about that. Why this is one of the most, actually, for brahmacharis in Bombay who are studying, they said the 15th chapter and this verse was their favorite. Because the 15th chapter is chanted before food and then this verse is chanted. So now their classes have ended, you know, for the morning, and now for lunch. Now they are hungry. They are looking forward to lunch. So 15 chapter they memorize very quickly because they have to chant it quickly. And then this particular verse is chanted before. So with, unless this verse is chanted, they don't get food. So that's why the 15th chapter and this verse is favorite. That's what Swamiji said, that when he was a brahmachari, it was our favorite. So oblations are Brahman, as we said. Whatever is offered in the fire is Brahman, and the wood is offered in the fire is Brahman. And first, even the Yajna Shala, that, you know, they put some bricks in a particular shape, that is also done with particular rules. It's not that anybody can put any bricks at any time, but depending on the purpose, the brick has to be placed. Just as, suppose you are building a residential property or a commercial property, will you put the same materials? No. Commercial property has its own requirements. You have to have this and that because more people will be occupying. A residential, you know, they can be a little lax, you know, less requirements. So just as a residential and a commercial property, so similarly the Yajna Shala, the brick arrangement is based upon what the purpose of the yajna is. It's all very scientific. It's all given in the Vedas. It's not somebody just came up with it. In fact, Nachiketa in the Kathopanishad, he, you know, the Yamraj describes him a yajna and a method, and he remembers it fully and said, from today onward, this will be known as Nachiketa Yagni. Yajna and Nachiketa Agni. So the point is that it is very precise. Now the oblations, the wood that is offered, you cannot select any wood. It has to be dried wood. But while you are cutting the wood, you have to chant mantras. So the wood also is purified. And not only that, you take permission from the tree. You bow down to the tree and say, "Oh Lord Tree, it is your grace that you have grown this wood, and may I borrow it, may I take it for my yajna." And not only that, but if you have taken wood and destroyed part of a tree, it is a duty to plant another tree to pay back to society. If I have taken wood and lit it, then it is my duty to repay. So the planting of trees, that's what is all described in our scriptures. How the attitude of the person should be while he's even collecting the wood or whether he's cutting the wood. And the ghee and everything is offered as Brahman, as the Lord Himself. Now, the fire is also, there's a particular fire. You cannot just take a matchbox, you know, go light up and put it in the wood. No, that's not the technique. You cannot do that. For lighting a yajna, at least in the olden days, nowadays maybe people don't follow it, but they had a technique called arani. And in the Kaivalya Upanishad, it is said very beautifully, "Atmanam aranim kritva pranavam chotararanim jnana nirmathanabhyasat pasham dahati panditaha." So the arani is a very unique instrument. What they used to do was have two stones, one above, like a, you know, like a oval shaped stones, and one below. And so there would be a long stick, whatever size stick, to fit exactly sharp, very sharp pointed stick on each side to exactly fit between the two stones. They would measure it. And in the lower arni, in the bowl, they would put some dry, you know, wood and some little, you know, little shavings of wood or some dried grass, which can easily catch fire. And then the priest would tie a rope around the stick and very rapidly move it. That was also, they had to be trained how to, and they would move it with such force that with the frictions, spark would be created in the lower arni. So there was the higher arni and the lower arni in which the stick was being rotated. And in the lower arni, there would be a spark, and the spark would catch. And then the dried wood would catch and it would get burnt. Start burning, and then from that you take another piece of wood, light it, and then light the Yajna Shala. So you cannot do it with matches or with a candle. it has to be done in a Vedic way. That was traditionally done. So in the Kaivalya Upanishad, it is used very beautifully. He says, Atmanam Aranim Kritva Pranavam Chotar Aranim. So make yourself the lower Arni and make Om, Pranava is Om, make Om the higher Arni. So connect yourself with Om. I am a little ego, but Om is the universal consciousness. Connect how? With that, the stick of knowledge. The stick of knowledge can connect. And then when you rapidly rotate this knowledge, that means whatever we have heard from the Guru and whatever we have read in the Bhagavad Gita, go home and churn it in your mind. Think about it. So with that churning, the spark of knowledge which will be created will burn all your bondages. Just as the spark created burns the wood, so similarly, through this understanding, with this Arani, when this knowledge comes, oh, okay, that makes sense. Then and then alone your bondages will be burnt. Pasham dahati panditaha. So the wise person. So the Arani is also, the fire is also very Vedic. You cannot just do it yourself. And Yajman, of course, the person chanting is Brahman, you know, the Lord himself, because the Lord is in every one of us. The priest, again, is, you know, incarnate manifestation of the Lord. The mantras that are chanted are all come from the Vedas, and the Vedas are Shruti, they are heard. So these yogis in their meditation heard these mantras from the total consciousness, and then repeated them to their students, and then to the students, and then on and on. Finally, they were written down. So the mantras came from God himself. That's why even we say the Bible is what? The word of God. God himself speaks to us through Jesus. So similarly, these mantras are spoken by the Lord. Now, what is Brahman? And why everything is called Brahman? You know, you say the ladle is Brahman, the ghee is Brahman, the oblations are Brahman, the chanting is Brahman, the bricks are Brahman, the priest is Brahman. How can all that be Brahman? And what is Brahman? So we'll spend a few minutes talking about that. Brahman comes from Briha, Brihatvat. Brihatvat iti Brahman. So Briha means big. So Brahman is big, but not big as an adjective. Like we say, this is a big house, or a big car, or a big mountain. No, it is bigness, where there is nothing bigger than that. In fact, it is beyond all these 14 worlds, even beyond all this universe which goes trillions of miles. It's bigger than that. It's bigger than all the heavens and hells and 14. Chauda lok tumari shakha, you know, we say that. So all 14 worlds, it's bigger than that. And also another usage of Brahman is Bharanvat, Bharanatvat. So that which supports, which nourishes us, which fills us up, so that is Brahman. That's why in Mumbai, they made another greater Bombay, they call. But the space became too small, so they made a greater Bombay. They call it Brihat Mumbai. That means greater Mumbai, bigger Mumbai. So it is a new or additional, so that's why Brahman is that. And when all actions are dedicated to God, then God becomes the goal and every action becomes an expression of my devotion. So that's why he says, Brahma eva tena gantavyam. The person's goal is Brahman. Why? Because all his actions are dedicated to Brahman. Just as a mountain climber, he wants to climb Everest, he has to dedicate all his actions to that. His eating, his exercise, his, you know, practice, and then he has to go to mountaineering school and buy special equipment. I remember a friend of mine climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Kenya, and he told me that for months he used to carry a heavy backpack loaded with what he would be taking, and he would climb 15-20 floors. He lived in an apartment building with the special heavy shoes and the heavy clothing, because it has to be warm clothing. And so to practice, he used to do that, as if he's climbing the mountain. And so the point is that training has to be there if I want to. So similarly, to climb this path of Brahman, the right action has to be done. the right devotion, and that alone should be my goal of life. Brahma, karma, samadhi, now only that is my goal. That is the essence of this verse. So Brahman is the supreme consciousness. So now, why is it chanted before eating? First of all, it should be grown in a, you know, that's why they say, you know, GMO, that's why they say organic now is becoming the big thing. Why? That not too much artificial, you know, ingredients. It should not be genetically, whatever nature intended, whatever God made. So it's actually very interesting. I was listening somewhere. He says that we used to believe that this gobar, you know, this, what do you call this, cow dung. In the olden days, they used to put cow dung to fertilize. That is not scientific. You need fertilizers. So we got from Dow Chemical and Monsanto and all these fertilizers. You know, that is what I remember in India in the 60s. That was the big news, you know, these 60s and 70s. You need to get fertilizer from America. And so all these fertilizers and chemicals we put. And then we realize, you know, and all this genetically modified, and then we, oh, how much bad side effects. So now they are going back to genetic, to organic farming. What gobar that we used to do, cow dung, in the early 20th century, 19th, for thousands of years, they are going, that is organic farming, right? Don't put all these chemicals, natural. So the food has to be grown in the correct way, which we don't have control over, but how people grow it. I have control over how I prepare and how I eat. So we'll focus on that. So now the preparation of food, when whoever is cooking, you know, whether it's the lady or the man or whoever is cooking, should cook with the idea that I'm cooking for God, because God is in my children, God is in my guests, and I should be chanting mantras when I'm cooking, or chant the name of the Lord, or play some good, you know, CD or some good, you know, bhajans, or so that my mind is divine. So food preparation is a very important step. You cannot just say, okay, and especially if you cook in anger, why do I have to cook? Then the food will get its anger. And not only that, again, I was listening somewhere, you know, people who eat non-vegetarian food, they say, how do they kill the chicken? They cut, there's a wire, and the chicken is cut and allowed to bleed to death. Now, and the chicken is still alive and it is bleeding. And as the blood is going on, what are the emotions of the chicken? Full of adrenaline, right? Full of stress. And that stressful chicken, or that cow, or that whatever, goat, whatever is killed, before it dies, there is so much stress of adrenaline created, and all these adrenosteroid hormones, and then that we cook or fry and we eat. So what you are eating is fried adrenaline. That's what you are. And all the karmas, you know, because all the negative karmas of you know, of doing that. I'm not trying to promote vegetarianism. I'm just telling you what the scriptures say, and this what I heard. That so the point is that how the food is prepared is very important, and with what attitude you are serving your guests, your cooking, it should be as a religious activity. It should be as important as going to the temple and lighting the, you know, aarti and doing the aarti. Cooking should be considered as a prayer. And how about eating? That is where at least my problem is. We eat too fast and we don't pay attention to the food. Eating should be a prayerful activity. You should not be watching TV. You should not be reading a newspaper, not be on your cell phone. I find in our, you know, surgical center, everybody's on their phone, and they're like, you know, like, the, and they're, what attention? When you're eating, your attention should be on the food, but nobody, and everybody's texting somebody else, and then they don't even know what they're putting in their mouth. So eating should be a prayerful activity. And then digestion is also the God. That's why in the 15th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Prani Nam Deham Ashritaha Prana Pana Samayuktaha Pachami Annam Chaturvidam. He says, I am the Vaishvanara, I am the digestive fire in you. So when Lord is digesting, we have to make sure we don't over abuse the body. Don't overeat. Don't eat the wrong things. Don't eat at the wrong time. Don't eat, you know, you had dinner and then at 10 o'clock, Gurudev says, you know, the Lord is now resting. Okay, I have digested the dinner. And then he said, well, now what happened? You know, ice cream, cold coffee with ice cream, 10 o'clock at night. He said, you just had dinner. You know, why you're eating? Or, a, you know, late night dessert or a snack. He said, at least go to sleep now. But the poor Lord, he has no, you know, we have no day or time or three times a day, four times a day, five, six times. We just keep on eating. So digestive fire is also him. Prana, pana, samasuda, intake and excretion, I control, the Lord says. And the attitude should be that who is giving me the food? It is not Vaughan's or it is not Albertson. It is Annapurna Devi. The lady Mother Parvati himself appears as Annapurna Devi to feed the world. And there is actually an interesting story about that. It says one time Shivji said, I don't know if this people, maybe it's in the Puranas, and said, you know, the world is not important. Most important is spirit. You know what we talked about. Why are you spending so much time in the world? So it seems Parvati ji got upset, Annapurna Devi, and she left. And she left and the whole world was hungry. There was no food and everything. Everybody was starving. And then who has time to remember Shiva, right? When you have no food, where you can remember God? They're all looking for food. And then Shivji realized that he had made a mistake. So Annapurna Devi was sitting in some mountain. So he goes with a begging bowl. He says, I'm sorry, you know, please come back. And so the point, and so then she comes back, and then of course the whole world is again filled with food. So the point is that food is important because it is the mother Annapurna, Mother Parvati himself who is feeding us. And what is the purpose of eating? Purpose of eating is not to fatten my body. Purpose of eating is not so I may get more taste. You know, that's what we do. Either we choose food that is unhealthy because it tastes good. It says, Jnana Vairagya Siddhyartham. So why am I eating? To get knowledge and to get detachment. And Bhiksham Dehi Chaparvati. Oh, please give me that. And why? So I may be healthy. Sthirai Rangaihi Stushtu Vagam Sastanu Bihi Yashema Deva Hitam Yadayu. So that whatever life has been given to me, may I have a healthy body, so I may serve the world. So it is to serve God and not to serve my body or just my tongue. And how is this whole universe, Brahman? Because think about it. What are we? We are all five elements, right? We are all five elements. Air, space, air, fire, water, earth. Me, this mic, this chair, this bag, everything, glass, everything is five elements. So all of us are five elements, so all of us are one. But actually the origin of the universe is one, which is the Satyam, which is the existence, which is the eternal consciousness. And what is effect? Effect is nothing but cause with name and form. So like gold. Gold is a bar, but gold, when it is given a different name and form, it becomes necklace, it becomes earring, becomes nose ring, anklet, bracelet, all those things. Mud is one, brown, but when it takes different name and form, it becomes cup and saucer and plate and, you know, jug and mug and all those things. So it is the same source. When it changes its name and form, it becomes effect. So what is effect? Effect is nothing but cause modified. So similarly, we all originated from Brahman. So Brahman is the cause and we are all the effect. So we are what? Cause modified. So all names and forms are just manifestations of that one consciousness, which is because of the Maya, because of the ignorance, to create duality. Otherwise, if we see everything as Brahman, everybody's realized, then there is no need for the world. But to create this duality, the power of Maya was done so that I see the variety. That's why the world looks different. You know, somebody likes brown coat, somebody likes black, somebody likes gray, somebody likes colorful, somebody likes dosa, somebody likes Chinese, you know. So all the variety is there. And so people, there's such a variety of people is because of to enjoy this world. So while I am enjoying, while I am living in this world, I should never forget that everybody is Brahman, just as I am Brahman. So this duality is to enjoy the world. You see the variety, but understand there is one which has become many. So that's why they say Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavi, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam, Brahmaivatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhina. So Brahman is the ladle, Brahman is the Yajna Shala, Brahman is the fire, Brahman is the one offering, and the goal is Brahman. And so when I am eating, I should say the food is God, the one who is eating is God, and the one who is digesting is also God. And the purpose of eating is to serve God. So that's why this mantra is chanted before eating to remind them that they are eating God. See, there is a very famous saying in Sanskrit, Jivo Jivasya Jivanam. Only a living being can nourish another living being. You cannot eat a rock or a stone to nourish you. You need a living, but that's why plants, because plants are alive. So that's why this mantra is very important. And that's why it is chanted. We have a few minutes. Any questions, any comments on either of those mantras?
And also, people say, well, if you kill a plant, it's screaming in pain, just like killing an animal.
True.
What do you say to that?
Yes, no, that is true. But it's the level of life is lower. See, we cannot eat rock. You cannot eat a stone. You have to eat a living being. But a plant is less evolved than an animal and doesn't express the pain as much. So yes, yeah, no, of course the plant also feels pain, but then you'll say, I won't eat anything. Then, so that's why the eating should become a spiritual activity. You should be grateful to the food, to the plant, for offering itself for your nourishment. So you eat with an attitude of gratitude. You thank God for creating the plant for our nourishment. Even the animals like the cows and the pigs and all we eat, they have to eat plants, right? They have to eat grain to fatten, and then you can slaughter the pig or slaughter the cow and eat it. So the plant is the essential source of life for the entire earth. Yes. And so something you have to have, even fish, they eat all these moss, you know, from the side of the rock and all. So yeah, so the plant is the essential source of it. And the Lord has created the plant to nourish us, because he knows that the individual needs something to eat. You know, you can't just starve. So the attitude should be gratitude to the Lord and gratitude to the plant that I'm eating. That's why you worship or you chant a prayer. That's why even, you know, in Christianity they say thank the Lord for the food he has provided us, and you know, all that. I always, when you go to a Christian home, they always say grace, you know, and that is the same idea, that the Lord is in this plant and the Lord has created, so you express your gratitude. But that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, it's obvious to me, of course, I'd rather eat a plant than an animal. I mean, who would want to But to them, they think, oh, well, everything's screaming and pain, so...
Right.
But then I just say, well, that's higher form of life.
Higher form of life. Then why don't they eat humans? You know, why don't they eat humans, right? They're also animals. You can eat another human. Why? Because they say, no, human is... Or why don't they eat dogs and cats?
Right, yeah.
Oh, no, dogs and cats are...
Yeah,
it's the same thing. You know, they're animals too.
Yeah.
Then you might as well start eating humans.
Yeah, well, that's good argument.
I mean, I'm not, again, I'm not trying to propagate my views. I'm just talking about food in general. You know, I mean, people can believe what they want to believe. There's no right or wrong.
There's one story I read somewhere where this American Indian boy in the winter time was on vacation, so he wanted to go to his village. So there's another American student who was in his class wanted to go with him. They had to travel a long distance walking and all that, and they had collected the granola bar and all this food with them. But at one place, the snow was so much they couldn't go further, and the last granola bar they were eating, and still they had to go many miles. So then there was a deer came by. So the American kid says, let's kill the deer so we can eat that meat tomorrow. So American Indian says, No, if it's going to be our food, it will be back tomorrow. The intention is so important. So the American kid thought, oh, well, you know, what if it didn't come? So he says, it's okay. If it didn't come, we'll just walk away. But if it's going to be, according to consciousness, if he's going to be our food, it will be there tomorrow. And he did appear next day. But the idea is that you first of all not consume more than what you need. And whenever you do something, pray to that life. I had a classmate in this medical school. Every time we dissected a body, she would first go and pray that body. To give up your body to me for learning.
Right.
So, you know, it's so important, the prayerful idea is very important in everything that you do.
True. Thank you. Yes.
I was listening to Swami Vivekananda's CD, the one you gave me. And, you know, Swami, he says, and he was giving an example of Jesus and Buddha, how these personalities are born. And he said that these personalities had great character, and it wasn't built in one life. It's the actions of lights after light accumulated that result into this character. And it, but the thought process that came into my mind is that our actions are building our character.
Right.
Right. So our actions, a lot of times we think about our actions for others. What is the impact on others? But what is the impact on us? Is that the real thing? Right? Also, I was watching Buddha on Netflix. There was a series called Buddha. And there Buddha says, what we say has an echo. So what? A lot of times we say things to either please someone or to hurt someone, but what is the echo of that? Those
right.
words are on us. So our actions and our speech, what is the, instead of just thinking what is the impact on others, but also what is the impact on us?
Right, right.
Not
so,
only what we say, but what we think, it goes to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
before even
that's
you talk,
true. Even,
you miss first
right.
that message.
Just true.
It's not the words, it's
right.
the heart. I think everywhere the intention is the most important.
Intention,
that
yeah.
goes first.
Right.
So building the character, I think, should be
right.
in our mind. And
absolutely, right, right. And just talk about food, like for an Eskimo, you know, it's impossible for him to be a vegetarian because all they see around is polar bears and seals and all. So obviously, now for that person, he or she doesn't have a choice. So you eat what you can see. So, and if that's all you see, so that is, but again, you know, it's, I just wanted to mention the point that depending on, like so many Mahatmas were non-vegetarian. So it doesn't, that's not the only criteria, like Ramakrishna Paramhans used to eat fish. I'm sure Jesus, Buddha and all ate, you know, non-vegetarian food. So that's not the only criteria because we give so much importance to food that food alone determines spirituality. No, it is more the thoughts, like all of you said today. It is the intentions behind, but the quality of food you eat does affect your thoughts. That's why eating more sattvic food makes your mind sattvic, you know, pure food and if you eat more heavy food, it makes your mind rajasic. And then if you have like alcohol, drugs and all, it makes your mind tamasic. So the kind of food does affect your thoughts and then ultimately your actions. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makashche Dukkavapa. Shanti, 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 Hari Om, Shri Guru Pyo Namah, Hari Om. Thank you very much.